Welcome back to Backbone Radio, and we weren't ready for that hard break that came up just at the end of the last segment. We have a little bit of technical difficulties, but my producer Don assures me that it is all under control now. So thank you for his hard work getting things worked back into line. I know, having worked that side of the booth, I know how difficult it can be to keep the computer doing exactly what you think you're telling it to do. Let's take that story up again with our guest James Bennett, he of Anglospheric fame, discussing particularly some interest, perhaps even on the labor side. I know that there's been some discussion about the there's been labor buy-in with the idea of devolving certain EU authority back to the regions, meaning back to the countries, and there's also been some discussion of funds that go with that going back to national control, which all sounds a bit like something that someone who is concerned about British sovereignty might want to see.
Well, I would say that the last month or two, especially with Cameron's little rendezvous in Brussels with Sarkozy and Merkel, has shown to a lot of people in Britain that the middle option seems to be collapsing. In other words, if the hard European option was full integration into a European federal state, and the hard Eurosceptic option was complete withdrawal, and there was a middle option which a lot of people put a lot of energy into, which was about repatriation of powers, repatriation of funds, more control coming back to Britain. And actually, I think the mood has been in the last, say, 8 weeks that it's the middle position that is collapsing, that the Europeans are not going to be offering that. They're not going to do that. They're going to come back eventually. And I think that the economics are going to drive this, that the Germans and the French will not abandon the whole concept of a ever closer union, in other words, ever more centralized control. They're not going to let the British have a half-in, half-out relationship, ultimately, and I think they won't be able to afford it economically, and that is going to leave unification or exit. And I think when push comes to shove, the British will take exit, and some of the Europeans might be happy to see them go at that point as well, because they've been nothing but a boat anchor on their hopes of creating a European federal state. So I'm seeing hardening positions in Britain, and a sense that middle position is dissolving. It's like sand in the tide, and this could be a big, big change in the relationship of things in the world. And this gets to the question of, well, if they were out, what would they do then? First of all, I think it would be almost certain that they would get a strong free trade agreement with the European Union on the lines of what the Swiss have, simply because the Europeans are the beneficiaries of their trade with Britain. They export more to Britain than Britain does to them, and when they're under so much of a crunch economically, they can't afford to let those jobs go. That would account for. So I think that there would still be a free trade relationship, but I think this would leave Britain much freer to chase opportunities in the rest of the world. And, you know, people like, not only Dan Hammond, but the hardly Eurosceptics like Alan Samueli at yourfreedomandours.blogspot.com, which I'll give a plug for, have pointed out when Britain went into the European Union, Europe had about a third of the world's GDP. And that has declined steadily. The U.S. has stayed about the same. We have not lost position. We have not gained it. Asia has taken up most of the position that Europe has lost. And it's a much different world. So the longer they stay in a declining sector like that, the worse their international trading position is. And Britain trades much more with the rest of the world than any other European state does, except possibly Ireland, which is basically in the same boat. But Britain, you know, it's about half of its trade with the continent, half of the trade with the rest of the world. most of the European states trade primarily with each other. So they've always been in a position where they need to be strengthening their outward trade ties. And the whole idea of Britain becoming, for instance, an affiliate of NAFTA is perfectly reasonable. It's, you know, they wouldn't be buying a pig in the poke. They can go look at the way NAFTA has worked over the last 15 years. There's a very specific database of, you know, the arbitration cases and the rules and all that, so they'd know what they were buying. They are so similar to Canada in their political and structural systems that, you know, basically a system that was designed for Canada to belong to would be very easy for Canada, for Britain to join, or for that matter, for Australia and New Zealand to join, and that, which has also been discussed.
And that leads us into the whole notion of the Anglosphere in general, that these are former British colonies, and in our case, it's a somewhat more complicated relationship, but former Commonwealth countries aside from us, and former who have areas where British influence and political influence and economic influence are still felt, forming this this relationship that you call the Anglosphere.
Well, that we all use the common law, that basically a lawyer trained in any one country can pick up the law in any other common law country pretty quickly and understand it. If you've done business in one common law country, it's pretty easy to get off the plane in another common law country, and when you go to talk about a contract or how to set up a company or something, you sit down with the lawyers and the accountants, and we are literally speaking the same language down to most of the technical terms. So that's an enormous ease of movement. And basically, there's been some studies on this that dealing with a country using the same language and the same sort of legal and social systems, it's about a 20% advantage in trade. So it's that much more profitable to deal with somebody with that existing commonality.
Yeah, the
lower transaction costs, if you want to get into the economics of it.
And it would also, if Britain were to turn to that, the inclusion of the United States and Canada and the Asian English powers of India, New Zealand, and Australia would provide them a much, and Hong Kong, I suppose.
Singapore, I think, would be
Singapore. I'm sorry, would be a much would provide them a door on rising economies, as opposed to tying, as you said, tying their boat to the shrinking economy of Europe.
As Dan Hannan put it, shackled to a corpse, but
he does have a way.
But it's also a thing that, you know, if the world is migrating to a prominently Pacific or Indo-Pacific axis. You know, four of the five big Anglosphere powers have front seats on that. And this is not true of any of the other linguistic cultural groups of Europe.
Well, and I, of course, we hear the music, A Land of Hope and Glory, coming in the back. I think the glory of empire is gone for good, but there may still be hope that we can reintegrate this relationship and provide some leadership for the world going into the 21st century. Thank you very much, James Bennett, for talking with us about the Anglosphere. We'll be back after the news with more
pleasure, Joshua.
Of Backbone Radio. Thanks very much.
Thanks. Bye-bye.